Foodie Films is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Hey there, foodie fans, and welcome back to another delicious episode of Foodie Films. Ooh, look at me changing up the recipe. Of course, this is your host, your chef de cinema cuisine, Kyle Reinfried. What's going on? What's happening? How are y'all? Oop, my phone's dinging. Sorry, that's unprofessional. But, yeah, how y'all doing? I was recently down in Asheville, North Carolina, and Charleston, South Carolina. A little southern swing. I did that with my friend, my fellow podcast co-host of P.S. I Still Love Hoffman and P.S. I Love Hoffman, Brian Rodriguez. It was his bachelor party, and so a bunch of us, like 15 of us, went to Asheville, and then 11 of us went on to Charleston, and I gotta tell you, between the beer scene in Asheville, woo, and then the food scene in Charleston, I mean, not that the beer scene is bad, we went to a brewery in Charleston as well, but we were kind of breweried out by that point. We went to like 5 breweries 3 days in a row, so like 15 breweries total, I think, or something like that in Asheville, and then, of course, drinking other places. And then we went to Charleston, and boy, the oysters down there. You guys know, like, oysters, right? I mean, we got some good oysters up here, of course, like the Long Island Blue Points and all that. My favorite oyster spot in the city, New York City, that is, upstate, you know, on the Lower East Side. Shout out to Shane Covey, the owner of that. Oh, such a great place. But the oysters in Charleston, oh, they're just, like, so big and delicious, and just, like, I just wanted to keep all the, like, the, you know, the seawater in this, or ocean water, whatever, salt water, all that in there, and just slurp it, and make sure to chew it. You know, you don't just slurp down an oyster, you chew on that bad boy. And they were delicious. And the shrimp and grits I had, I wish I had the place on, it was Fleet Something in, like, the downtown area, the name of the restaurant, Fleet Something. And the shrimp and grits I had there, oh, man. Mm. But I'm not talking about seafood and craft beer today. I'm talking pasta and a whole lot more with my guest, Allison Arevalo. And she has a book and a new restaurant. And oh, I just want to let you know, we recorded this, and at the end, I thought I was going to release the episode before the book was released, so we talk about pre-orders. You can order the book now, so stay tuned to find out where you can order the book, Pasta Friday, or, I mean, it's pretty easy, just Google it, and you're going to find where you can order it. But this is a really fun episode. Allison is awesome, and I can't wait for you to listen to it, so here we go. Allison, thank you so much for having me at your home, and we're here, we're recording. We met just 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
2 weeks ago to the date.
Yep.
And well, let's just talk about kind of how we met. Jenna is our connective
yes.
tissue. So, yeah, why were you at the Time Out Marketplace that day?
Well, I was meeting with Jenna that day to set up an event for my new cookbook that's coming out.
Very exciting. Which,
yeah, it was super exciting. To do an event at Time Out Market would be amazing because I saw the space for the first time maybe a week after it opened. And just that, like, rooftop bar and all of the restaurants there, it's such an incredible space. So I was really excited excited to meet with her and hopefully set up an event.
Yeah, so let's, for anyone that doesn't know who you are, why don't you just explain a little bit about yourself, I guess.
Sure.
Just, yeah, what you're doing.
Okay, well, I am a restaurateur and a cookbook author. I have a restaurant in Oakland, California called Homeroom, and it was all different kinds of mac and cheese. I co-founded it in 2011 and owned it for about 7 years, sold it recently, a little over a year ago, actually, now. And then I have a cookbook with them called the Mac and Cheese Cookbook, which, if you ever wanted to learn how to make all different kinds of mac and cheese, it's pretty great.
Awesome.
And then I moved to New York about 2 months ago, from here originally, but, lived in Oakland for 11 years and moved back here.
Okay.
And yeah, now I'm working on my new restaurant and I have a cookbook coming out in about a month. Well, lots. Maybe even by the time, probably less by the time this comes out too. But so yeah, it's exciting.
Lots of new things.
Lots of new things.
So you're from New York originally.
Yeah.
Let's start at the beginning.
Sure.
Where did you grow up and who was cooking? What were you eating? All of that good stuff.
Yeah. So I grew up in the Five Towns, which are right, these small little towns right by Kennedy Airport.
Oh, okay.
So right on the border of Queens and Long Island, I was often taking the subway into the city when I was a kid, and we'd drive to Kennedy Airport and watch the planes land like right out of Wayne's World. My family was all about food from, since as long as I could remember. We'd wake up in the morning and talk about what we're going to have for dinner. And it was always my dad cooking and or my grandmother or my great-grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
My whole family lived on the same block growing up, so we'd be able to run across the street to grandma's house or my aunt's house.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It was great. I mean, it was great until you're a teenager and you try to have parties at your house.
Yeah.
And everyone's watching you. Then it's not so great. But it's nice when you want your grandmother to make breakfast for you at 7 o'clock in the morning. And mm-hmm. So it was a good way to grow up. Every Sunday we would meet at my great grandmother's house, and until she was 92 years old, she'd make this big Italian feast for the whole family. Lots of meatballs and pigskin and, sausage and homemade pastas and, it was just a big feast, and mm-hmm. it was just how we ate. It was just what we did, every Sunday. And
the Sunday sauce.
Yeah, it was the Sunday sauce. And, it really wasn't until I moved to California where I realized most people don't eat like this. It was just such a common thing growing up. All my friends did it. I had a lot of Italian American friends.
I was going to say a lot more Italian Americans also right here versus I assume in California, Northern California.
Not as many.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they also they talk very differently. So people would look at me very strangely when I would order a prosciutto or a mozzarella, and they're "What the hell is that?" And
Capicola.
yeah, it's not a thing in California. That's how we grew up. Every night, my dad would cook something, and I'd help him cook, or I'd help my grandmother cook, and our lives just really revolved around food for as long as I can remember.
Yeah, I love that you're saying, in the morning, you'd be planning the next meal. That's one of my favorite mm-hmm. things, just generally to do.
Yes.
And it's not like a measurement of the meal you're eating at the time. You're just even enjoying it so much, and you're just like, it's almost like when you wake up and you're like, oh, I can't wait to do that. From a good sleep, and you're like, that was so good. I can't wait to do that again. It's just like a good meal. You're like, oh, I can't wait to have another good meal. And you start planning your next meal.
Yeah. I don't know how everyone doesn't live like that, but I think one day, and my husband and I were having a conversation, and I said something to him like, it is not a good day unless you eat well.
Yeah.
And he'll throw that back at me often. He's like, well, how was your day today? What did you eat? I still feel that way. I always try to seek out good meals throughout the day. Because even if you're having a bad day, it just makes you feel better. And
one of the earliest ahas of starting a podcast about food and film is just I was taking, I had an Instagram, and friends kept saying, it's like you've got a food Instagram. I never see pictures of you on it. I'm like, well, I'm the one taking the picture. It is me, and this is what I'm enjoying. And my favorite thing to do, like, with then a good meal is, especially, well, especially if I'm eating out, mm-hmm. is to take a picture of it and then tag the place and say, like, and so, like, and hopefully do somewhat of a good job taking a picture so it looks, you know, as appetizing as it looks in person and obviously tastes. And so then people can be like, oh, wow, that looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. And maybe they'll ask me about it, or they'll just see it and be like, oh, I gotta go there.
Cause that's the hope.
That's exactly. That's the hope. And I'm sure as a restaurateur, that's definitely the hope for you, you know.
Which wasn't really the case in 2011 when I was opening Homeroom, because Instagram was barely a thing. Mm-hmm. And you're not thinking about, well, how is this service going to photograph, and are these lights going to make the food look really appetizing in photos? And you just didn't have to think about that. But now, planning a new place, it's like, oh, wow, all right, well, which materials are going to look good in photos, and how could I put this by the windows where there's natural light?
Yeah.
And so there's all of these new things to think about now when you're opening a restaurant.
It's all about that natural light. I always get furious. I'm like in a place, I'm like, this is so good, but I'm just like in a dark restaurant right
now. Yeah, yeah.
So growing up, when did you, I mean, I'm sure very early on, but when did like the passion for food begin? When, what was that next step for you besides just like being around and eating it? Like, when did you start assisting or anything like that?
Well, I started helping with my grandmother when I was really young, when I was like 7 or 8 years old. After church, my mom would drop me off there and I'd help her make the meatballs. Mm-hmm. And she taught me, you know, all of the things that go into the sauce. And so I learned at a young age. But from there, the next step was working in restaurants.
Okay.
And I remember my first job in a restaurant was in front of the house. It wasn't back of the house, but I totally lied on my resume and said I was 18. And I think I was like 15 or 16. I was really young. And I got a job at this really fancy seafood restaurant on Long Island, and I don't know how they hired me, but they did. And I was serving, you know, like $50 lobster tails, and it was the kind of place that you had to hold the bottle of wine to open it. You couldn't put it on the table to open it, and I had no idea how to open wine, so I used to have to share my tips with the other servers so they'd help me. But that was the start of me just loving restaurant life.
Yeah.
You know, and since then I always worked in restaurants through college, you know, after school. It was always where I wanted to be. And then when I went to college, I kind of figured like, okay, maybe I should major in something else, and maybe like I need to know something other than food. Mm-hmm. So then I majored in marketing, and I got a job doing writing and journalism.
Oh,
and,
awesome.
So I had a pretty strong writing background and marketing background before I jumped into owning my own restaurant.
Cool.
Yeah.
So when did you make the move? Because when we met, we had lunch together at the marketplace.
Yeah.
And you said that you and your husband got married like kind of right around there.
Yeah.
But Dumbo, very like different now. Is just even from, I think the first time I went there was like 2010. I was working on a show, and it's just so different.
It's so different. Yeah, it's really different. But it was still, it was, you know, just on the brink of becoming like where everyone wanted to be when we got married, which was in 2008. I think our wedding photo is like, probably, it's like right at that location that's the most Instagrammed place, with like the bridge in the background and a cobblestone street. But, you know, we did it way before it was cool. So my husband and I got married in 2008. We met at work. We were both working for Columbia House, where, you know, you get the 49 cent DVDs, and you had to join the club and stuff. We were both writers there. And after we got married, we just decided that we got tired of life in New York, of living in Brooklyn and commuting into the city and the snow and getting our car towed. And we just got tired of it. So we quit our jobs and packed the car and moved out west to Oakland.
Why Oakland?
Well, at first it was going to be Berkeley, which is, you know, right next door.
Sure.
And I had this idea in my head of what I thought Berkeley was like. And in my head, it looked like Hawaii, you know, like it was just organic food everywhere and always sunny and hot. And I had no idea. I mean, I've been to San Francisco once in my life when I was in college. But other than that, I'm like, all right, this doesn't work out. We'll move back. Why not? So we moved there, but it was always with the intention of opening a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do it in Brooklyn, but it just seemed at the time just too hard to get in. You know, so we're like, all right, let's move somewhere where the weather's nice all the time. We don't have to deal with the elements. We could figure it out from there. So we moved to Oakland, and then less than a year later, I opened Homeroom.
Wow. Yeah. And you guys had, who was your partner in it?
Yeah. So I met my partner at a cafe, actually.
Oh, wow.
And we were sharing a table at a coffee shop with our husbands. And we started chatting. And she was a lawyer and she always wanted to open a restaurant. And I was working in marketing at the time for Chevron Credit Union. And it was terrible. It was such a terrible job. But so we were just talking about how we both, it was a dream of ours. And then she called me one day and she's like, let's do it. Let's quit our jobs and open a restaurant. And
awesome.
Yeah. So we did. We invested all of our life savings into mac and cheese and
wow.
prayed that it was going to work.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, a steep learning curve because neither one of us have ever owned a restaurant before. Mm. And we had to figure out ordering and scheduling and I mean, everything that goes into actually owning a restaurant instead of working in one.
Yeah, what was that learning curve like? And then just like how long was that process of starting a restaurant?
I mean, it was a pretty steep learning curve. It took us, before we opened, we had about a year where we were testing out all the recipes and building a brand mm-hmm. and doing outreach. And we were cooking mac and cheese at farmers markets and all kinds of events to get the word out. But when we opened, we had 12 employees. Mm-hmm. And I think like the first giant mistake that we made was before we opened, we put an ad up on Craigslist that was like, come work for the coolest new restaurant in Oakland, Homeroom, and you'll be able to make your own hours. And, you know, you don't need any experience. And we're looking for great people. Like, we just had this open roll call. We're like, just show up. We're going to interview you. And, you know, we'll see what
show
happens.
Show up to Homeroom.
Yeah. So we did that. And we got there. And there was a line down the block of people waiting to get interviewed. It
wow.
was insane. I mean, people were sleeping on the sidewalks. So my business partner and I, we had a split up and we both interviewed people for 5 minutes each. And then we'd be like, okay, what do you think of that person? What do you think of that person?
How many people were you looking to hire?
12.
Okay.
And I think the numbers went up to, I think we interviewed like 120 people that day.
Wow.
Because, yeah, one of the people that we ended up hiring was like number 106. And he's like, I'll always remember that. I was number 106. And he came in. He's like, do you guys need coffee? Do you need anything? Can I help you? And we're like, you are hired. Like, you're the only one who's asked us that. But yeah, that ended up being a terrible idea though. That is not a good way to hire people. Mm-hmm. And we also thought that giving people, less rules and expectations would be great ways to be bosses that everyone's adults, you know, they could choose their own vacation. They could choose their own shifts. It turns out that's also a terrible idea that, people need expectations. Like
yeah.
they need to know, you know, when, what exactly is expected of them to feel, you know, comfortable and in a job. And they need to know how to grow in the role and how,
yeah.
and what they can learn and, how, because that's actually how you empower people by explaining exactly what they need to do. And instead of saying like, oh, it's all up to you. You got to do it all on your own. So it was a steep learning curve. We started with 12 people. We quickly grew. Our staff ended up being like close to 90 people when I left 7 years later.
Wow.
And we had two locations. So we did learn eventually.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah.
yeah.
And what was the reason behind like Homeroom? Like I had the classroom vibe. What was the, you know?
Yeah, I mean, when you think of a time in life when you love eating mac and cheese,
mm-hmm.
it's oh, when you're in school,
yeah.
you know, when you're passing notes in class and laughing with friends. And so we wanted to bring back that nostalgic feel and
mm-hmm.
we wanted people just to feel, you know, like happy and they feel like they want to make memories and, you know, just a really comfortable place
yeah.
to hang out and eat good food.
And mac and cheese, I mean, I think you have, as soon as someone says mac and cheese, I think anyone's hooked.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah. yeah, I mean, our concern at first was, how are people going to eat this more than like once a month or something like that? Like, how are we going to get repeat customers?
Sure.
But we would have people that came in 3 times a week. I mean, it turns out that people could eat a lot of mac and cheese.
There you go.
So, yeah.
How many different types of mac and cheese did you have?
About 12 on the menu.
Okay.
And we would rotate a couple of specials. But... But yeah, and there was always some favorites. Like we would do a special
mm-hmm.
with Dungeness crab that was
Ooh.
Delicious. That was always on like the top of the bestseller list.
Yeah.
And we had a Gilroy garlic mac, and that one was delicious. So yeah, lots of different kinds.
I did not eat before coming here. I regret this tremendously. I broke a cardinal rule of mine.
Oh no.
but then, so you opened it in 2011.
Yeah.
And then you said you sold your
yeah.
shares.
So
like
I sold it. Yeah. I sold in 2000, the end of 2017, maybe. So yeah, almost 2 years ago now, actually.
What brought that on?
Well, you know, we got to the point that it was, you know, like I said, 90 employees in two locations, and it became a very different job than what we had when we first opened the restaurant. It was lots of meetings and talking about expanding and talking about workers' comp, and it was just lots of meetings. Yeah, and it was kind of what I tried to get away from.
Yeah,
when
much
I
more
first.
The corporate.
Right.
Yeah.
And I love restaurant life. Like, I love being in there and chatting with customers and creating recipes and just being totally like part of it. But what I don't love is having an office job.
Yeah.
So when it got to be that point, and it was tough because I was like, man, like, I am miserable. And it was, you know, my business, you know,
yes.
It's like, how do you get out of something that you created? So it was a really tough spot. And I didn't know what I was going to do for a while. But, and then right around that time too, my son got really sick. He needed a really risky surgery, and my sister had stage 4 cancer. And
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. So there was a lot of personal things going on in my life at the same time that I was like, you know what? Like, I think I need to get out of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I sold to my business partner. So Homeroom's still around. She owns 100% of it now. And so I sold my shares, and it totally ended up being the best thing. Like, when it was all said and done, I just felt like, what an amazing decision I made. Like, I totally didn't regret it at all. I thought it was, you know, really worth it.
And that's where Pasta Friday kind of started,
yeah,
then, right?
Yeah, exactly. So right when I was going through all of that, I realized, because I had two young kids at the time, mm-hmm. and I was going through trying to sell my business and, you know, and helping my sister. And it was a lot of stress. And I felt that the only times that I really felt good and better about myself and happy was when I was cooking for my friends.
Sure.
So I started inviting them over on Fridays. So it started out with just a few people, and I'm like, hey, come over. I'm going to make some pasta. Let's all hang out, bring some wine. And within a few weeks, it grew to this big thing. And like, more and more people found out about it. They're like, hey, can I get an invite to Pasta Friday? And I was like, oh, okay. So I started an email list, and then I started some rules, because I have learned about expectations and people need to know what, you know, what to expect.
Yeah.
So I have a whole list of rules at the end of the email, which is actually kind of funny at this point. But yeah, the list grew to over 100 people, and I'd be cooking for like 40 adults and 20 kids every Friday. And it was crazy and hectic, but also amazing.
Yeah,
and
what goes into the preparation of that? I mean, that's got to be a lot of
it's
work.
A lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. I mean, I shouldn't say that. It's not always a lot of work. It depends on the recipe and what I was trying to achieve that week. But it's just, when you cook pasta for a lot of people, it stretches. So you could really, you don't have to cook that many things to feed 20 people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as hard as people would think that it was, mm-hmm. or maybe it got easier since I've done, you know, like over 50 of these dinners already. But yeah, I would normally start the day before. I would just think about the menu and everything that I needed to get and anything that needed to be prepped ahead of time, I would do. Or if I was doing meatballs, I'd, you know, make them ahead of time, maybe throw them in the freezer. But then I would just have people help me when they showed up too. So if things weren't prepped,
yeah.
It's like, all right, well, who's going to be cutting some onions, and who's going to, you know, cut the peaches for the salad? And and people actually love that. I mean, they love feeling like they're part of it. And became routine, you know, because generally the same people would come every week, and there would probably be between 10 and 15, either newcomers or people, guests of other people. And so all of the regulars would be like, okay, well, I'm on kids' pasta, and I'm going to cut the baguettes, and someone else brought the popsicles. And so, and it really did become a community that way, because people just, everyone knew each other. Everyone knew what their role was when they came in. And, so yeah, it was great.
Yeah, what was that atmosphere like? I mean, just obviously starting out with a small group and expanding, and I'm sure through that, people obviously met people they didn't know before, and friendships were bonded through that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that all of the relationships that came out of Pasta Friday. There was one breakup that's unfortunate, and they were breaking up actually like at the table, and I sat down and had no idea what was going on.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of funny. But yeah, people talking about business ideas and, you know, different kids that became really good friends and school ideas, and just all of these people who never knew each other who became so close. But the funny thing too is no one really knew what anyone did for a living. Like people would come in and they would chat and they talk about their work week and like things that they did. But, you know, I'd be chatting with, you know, one example is my friend Randy, who's the CEO of a big tech company. And I'm chatting with him and he's like, oh, I really love Holly and Fernando and I see them every week. And what do they do? I'm like, well, Holly's actually a chef at Chez Panisse. And he's like, what? You know, and it's like, you never know that people have these amazing jobs. And because it wasn't about that. It just wasn't about connecting or networking on that level. It was about talking about life, you know, and just getting to know what people needed or, you know, who needs a babysitter and who is looking for, you know, advice on something. And that same guy, Randy, told me, he's like, you have given me the big Italian family that I have always wanted, which I thought was just so great. And it was true. We really did just become a family in that way.
What do you think are like the important things of that, creating a family and a community and traditions? Like, I mean, that's something I feel like we've kind of lost, you know, over the years. So
I think it has to be consistent. You know, it doesn't have to be every week. Putting on an event like that every week is really
hard.
It's
a big undertaking.
It is. But it has to be at least once a month, you know, and for it to like gain momentum and for everyone to feel comfortable with each other. And if you start doing it less than once a month, I feel like it doesn't achieve the same purpose. Like then it just becomes a gathering or it becomes just entertaining. Yeah. But if you can do it at least once a month and, you know, hopefully at least some of the same people come every week and then you know, invite more people. But I think the consistency really makes a big difference.
I love entertaining, and that's just like hearing that like is something I think I definitely want to start doing. And then also I love New Orleans is like my favorite food city.
Yeah.
And I love on Mondays they do red beans and rice. Like that's just, and it comes just from the simple tradition, or not even tradition, but just that everyone did their laundry on Mondays and they knew they could leave like red beans and rice cooking on the stove.
Oh, wow.
And so now that's just like, you go down there and red beans and rice, like you hear that. And sometimes, you know, people hear pasta and they're just like, oh, it's simple, but it just can, obviously the more, not even the more you add to it, obviously, you know, but just, you know, you find certain flavorful things to put into it.
Yeah.
And it just becomes this special dish.
Yeah.
That just everyone
exactly
circles around and craves.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So what was it like? I mean, so you, obviously, a lot of decisions, you know, I mean, so you moved out to Oakland, then you started up a restaurant, and then you decided to leave that business, and then you started doing Pasta Fridays. What made the decision of coming back to New York, and how did that, what was that like for you? And you said, obviously, you have your husband, your two sons.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was a really hard decision to come back to New York. We love Oakland and, you know, we had this community there and, you know, even all of our friends were, they really were like family. Like we spent Christmas and Thanksgiving with our friends and I mean, all of our kids, we'd have sleepovers. I mean, we were all so, so close. Mm-hmm. So, and we had this like beautiful house with a really nice kitchen and the perfect neighborhood. Like Oakland is a great place to live. So we made the decision probably almost a year ago at this point. So I, you know, like I said before, my sister was diagnosed with cancer, and we found out that it got worse. So she was diagnosed probably like 7 years ago at this point, and she was only given a few weeks to live at that point. And
oh, wow.
She lived 6 years past that, which was amazing. But it was a hard 6 years. I mean, it was constant treatments and in and out of the hospital. And so she fought for a really long time. And then we found out that it spread and the doctors were giving her a year to live. So at that point, my husband and I were like, we got to move.
Yeah.
And it was the right thing to do. I mean, my sister and I were very, very close and she's got two little girls.
Oh.
So we made the decision to move. We were going to wait until my older son finished first grade and we were going to move in June or in May. And so we figured we'd still have some time. But she ended up passing away 2 months after that. So
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, thank you. So she didn't have as much time as we thought. So we moved here and now, you know, to be closer to my parents and to my nieces and, you know, my nieces actually stayed with us this weekend and it was so great.
That's
so
great.
It's so nice that we get to be with them all the time. And, so we're happy we made the move.
Yeah.
And we love New York and we love Brooklyn. So, you know, even though Oakland was great, I feel like it already has been such a smoother transition than we imagined it would be. So we're happy to be back.
What are some of the differences you see, like, back here now? Or just differences in general between here and Oakland? Just let's start with food and products.
It is so different.
Produce and meats and all of that.
Okay. Produce is way better in Oakland. I mean, I've been trying to find, maybe I just haven't been here long enough and I haven't been exploring enough, but, I just haven't been able to find really great produce in New York other than at like the farmer's market and at Whole Foods. But, yeah, in Oakland, you could just find it almost everywhere. Like, all the little markets have really good produce. There's a farmer's market almost every day of the week that you could find somewhere, and it's all year round.
Yeah, that's definitely the big negative here is that once late fall, winter, you know, comes around.
Yeah. I mean, there's more variety in Oakland, too. I mean, one of the best things in California in the summer is Padron peppers, which I cannot find at all here. Like, we have shishito peppers here, but not Padrons. And Padrons are much better, I think. the peaches, I think, are better in California. Yeah, like all the stone fruits. But I got to say, the other side of that, we've been eating out, not a lot, but often since we moved back to New York, and eating out is way better in New York than it is in Oakland.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think cooking at home is better in the Bay Area, but eating out, we've had such better restaurant experiences here.
Just in the sense of the quality or quantity of places, or just, I mean...
I think both. You know, like here, you can go and get a $5 falafel and it could be amazing, you know, and it's really hard to do that in San Francisco or Oakland. It's really hard to find budget items, you know, like there are food trucks, but even the food trucks are really expensive. You could find really good cheap tacos. I think that's the exception. There's really, really good tacos in the Bay Area. But yeah, the cheap food in New York is much better. Going to a nicer restaurant is actually less expensive in New York than it is in San Francisco. In San Francisco, I find that like you go out, typical cocktail price is $20.
Wow.
$20 is like typical at like a nice place.
Yeah.
And which is not the case here. I mean, I find that it's more like $15 at a really nice restaurant here, which is okay. It's
could be better.
It could be better, but it's definitely better than San Francisco. But yeah, the places that we've gone so far, our bill is way less than what it was in San Francisco. So it's been really nice.
So you're opening up a new restaurant.
Yes.
And just tell me about that. Going into that process, because you've got your book coming out, you've got opening up the restaurant.
Yeah.
What was the order of that, and what have you...
Well, I mean, I wasn't expecting to open a restaurant so quickly after moving here.
Okay.
I mean, the intent was going to be to, promote the book and work on events for the book and help my boys transition to the school and hang out with my family. But we found this location and it was just so perfect. And we actually found the location before we even found a place to live. And, you know, we saw it online and I was like, oh my God, this is it. Like, I have to open something there. And, so I came down to check it out while we were still living there. And we went into contract on it and it's great. I mean, it's really small. The place is going to be called Pasta Louise, and it's going to be all kinds of fresh pasta with a bunch of sauces, homemade popsicles for kids, lots of salads, beer and wine, totally kid friendly. And yeah, it's going to be on 8th Avenue in the corner of 8th Street. So 8th and 8th, right by Prospect Park, right by the subway.
Nice.
Great location. Yeah, it's a really good location. I think it's going to be awesome. It's going to be, you know, hopefully lots of takeout, but also some seats. So yeah, it's exciting.
It sounds a lot like Pasta Friday, just right? I mean, just as far as the menu and
It will be similar to Pasta Friday. I didn't think that Pasta Friday was a good name for a restaurant. I was thinking about, I'm like, well, maybe there could be some consistency there. And also TGI Fridays was not very happy with that idea. They made that clear to me. So, and I decided on Pasta Louise because it's my middle name and it was also my grandmother's name.
Very nice.
So yeah, it was a good connection to my family. And and the idea would be to do Pasta Friday type events there also. Mm. So I'm going to do... Yeah, either on Fridays or other days, do some kind of like big pasta night where you could bring family and friends and things like that. There's going to be, I'm also a big runner, and there's going to be running events, so you could maybe do like a lap around Prospect Park and then come and have a big pasta dinner. So we're going to do things like that. Yeah, I'm probably going to have a mac and cheese there too. We could do like a mac and cheese Mondays or something like that, because I feel like how could I not? But yeah, so it'll be exciting.
Are you? I didn't know
That
that
was
was a
my dog,
horse. Yeah,
sorry.
I thought it was a bird for a second.
Her ears flapping.
Do you see possibly trying to recreate Pasta Friday like at your home here again, like
Oh
after
yeah,
like,
I've already started doing it.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I mean, that was another thing that I wasn't going to start doing right away, because I'm like, all right, I have all these other things I have to work on. But yeah, as soon as we got here, my older son Nico was like, "Mama, when's Pasta Friday?" And I was like, "Oh, maybe this week will be Pasta Friday." Okay. And I have friends here from college and friends that we knew when we lived in Brooklyn before we moved, and my husband has family here too. And so yeah, our list is already, I think, up to maybe like 20 or 30 people we have on the list already. So yeah, we've done two official ones. We did a couple of, practice runs before I sent out any emails, but it was great. The last one especially was really great, because the kids really were bonding and running around, and they really enjoyed it, so it was
That's
fun.
awesome. Yeah, it must be really nice to reconnecting, reuniting with people, and just what a perfect way to do it.
It's funny reuniting with people after so many years, because a lot of the people here I knew when I was in college, and you're still sort of children, and now we all have our own children and we're all adults, and it's, you're really just getting to know each other again, which is, it's kind of great. It's pretty amazing.
Tell me about the process of book publishing. So you have one published already, one is, on its way.
It's a tough process, and it takes a really long time. So the first step is you write a proposal, and your proposal is basically a short version of your cookbook. So it needs to have the voice and the basic design, and most importantly, who you're going to sell it to and how you're going to sell it. So you need to prove to a publisher that you could sell a ton of books for them, and why people will buy it. So that's what they look for when they start flipping through your proposal. And then you have to decide if you want an agent or not, if you want to shop it around yourself to publishers, or if you want someone to do it for you. In my case, for the first cookbook, I did not have an agent, because our publisher basically came to us. So it was published by 10 Speed Press, and their office was right by Homeroom, and they'd come in for lunch all the time, and
Oh,
they're like, "We
perfect.
don't have a mac and cheese cookbook in our library, and we'd love if you would write one."
Wow.
Like, hell yeah, that's amazing.
That was served to you right on a platter, and that, at least in that way, of just like someone saying like, we don't have this kind of book, versus, I feel like normally people are like, ooh, where can I, what isn't being, utilized, or yet, like, I mean, I had Kristen Tomlin on of Dough, and it's a cookie dough business. And I was saying to her, like, I'm not trying to take anything away from you, but like eating cookie dough is just, but whenever you're making something growing up, that's just like, that was like the number one thing. So I'm just a little surprised that, like, kudos to you that you capitalized on it, but that no one really had like a big, healthy, not healthy, well, no offense. I'm digging myself, because people, there's all the negative, people think you're going to get sick from eggs. So they found a safe way for you to eat, cookie dough. And so that was pretty impressive. So that's kind of awesome that they came to you and said, yeah, mac and cheese, like, let's make a
I mean,
book.
and it was 10 Speed, which is an awesome publisher. So we definitely lucked out with them, and they were totally great to work with, and we had a great experience with 10 Speed. But the only issue with going that route is you don't have anyone to negotiate your contract for you.
Oh, okay.
And when you have a restaurant, it's a little different, because a cookbook is such a great marketing tool. So it almost doesn't matter, unless you're getting completely robbed. Like, it almost doesn't matter what your contract is like, because now you have this great tool that you could sell at your restaurant, that another way to bring people in the
Sure,
door.
yeah.
So it didn't quite matter as much. For my second cookbook, I did have an agent, because I didn't have a restaurant yet, and I wanted to make sure that the contract is what I needed it to be, and that it was fair. And so And actually, the agent that I got was a friend of mine, this woman, Michelle Krim, who was, she worked in the marketing department at 10 Speed. And so her and I knew each other from the first book. And we worked really well together and we had a great relationship. And so I emailed her. I'm like, do you want to meet up for coffee? I have this idea. I want to run it past you, see what you think. And so I showed her my proposal and I was like, I don't know. Do I need an agent? What do you think? And she's like, I'll be your agent. I was like, really? She's like, yeah, why not? I'm going to start up an agency. And she did. She started up her own agency. I was her first client. And now she has like she has a lot of really great clients and this successful business. And she's just an all around great person and a good friend of mine. So Michelle became my agent and she shopped around the proposal to a few different publishers. And yeah. And it's funny because once you start doing that, publishers have an idea of what they want the book to be. So you could write a proposal and they'll be like, well, this is great, except you need to make these changes. So in my case, a lot of publishers wanted it to be an Instapot book because that's sort of what sells.
What's in that, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Like, well, you could do these recipes in an Instapot, right? And I was like, well, I guess, but I don't really want to. Mm-hmm. So I ended up choosing Andrews McMeel to publish this book because they were giving me a great deal of creative freedom and they loved the proposal the way it was and they loved the recipes the way they were laid out and I just really liked their vision for how the book was going to turn out. So I'm really happy with them.
That's awesome. Yeah, because Pasta Friday had already been covered back when you were living out in Oakland as far as like write-ups about it and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So there must have been a pretty good clear, and then you going in with your game plan for them to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And when we met and you had your book out, I was, you know, perusing it and I love it. I love the pictures.
Oh, thank you.
I love, you know, like you got pictures of your boys in there and just like, it just really does feel, you know, I don't know how to verbally explain it, but just what you imagine when you friends and family and just everyone getting together just for, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we wanted to get across.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want it to look like a family photo album. And that was my concern at first. I'm like, okay, we're going to have all of these pictures of these lifestyle shots of people. I'm like, I don't want someone to look at it and be like, who are these people? Why do I care? But I wanted it to look more like, you know, like you could imagine yourself hosting one of these and having all these people at your house and, you know, seeing kids, you know, steal bread off the counter and yeah, like just have people imagine what their life could be like if they have their own tradition of Pasta Friday. Because it really is this life-changing thing and you don't realize it right away. It takes a few nights or a few of these dinners to be like, wow, like you suddenly have all of these people to count on, which is amazing. You know, people that you call when you need a last minute babysitter, people that you call when you are just having a bad day, when you want to go out for a girls' night, or, you know, when the guys want to go out to karaoke, or, I mean, like all of these things that ended up coming out of it. It was just, it really was incredible.
And so we got the book, we got the restaurant, it seems like you, like, no pun intended, keep your plate pretty full.
Yeah, like mean to do it. It just kind of keeps happening. You know, I think that like since we decided to move to California, you know, like I tend to be sort of impulsive, I think. Mm-hmm. And I make these decisions and it seems to be working out, yes, luckily. But I'm impulsive may not be the right word. I used to always think of myself as impulsive, but I think I like to make decisions and stick to them. I'm not the kind of person that will make a decision and think about it a week later and be like, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. It's like, nope, made it. I'm following through. I'm doing it. And so even, you know, when I decided to write this cookbook, I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. And it was hard. And, you know, when all of these publishers are like, well, this is not exactly what we want. You know, I don't know if we're going to take it. And it would have been really easy to be like, all right, well, you know, I'll go on. Maybe I should just forget this or maybe I just move on to something else. But like, you know, I have a hard time taking no for an answer. Like I will push until it's very clear that something won't work or I'll figure out a way to make it work. And I've just always kind of been that way. Yeah. You know, I've just made these decisions and just like, all right, well, this is what's next. And I keep thinking like, all right, I'm going to have a year that's kind of on the down low and I'm going to have, you know, I'm going to like take things easy this year. And then that just ends up not happening somehow. Like, so like an opportunity will just come my way and I'm like, okay, well now I'm doing this. And you know, like last year I ended up, going to Italy and learning how to make pasta from this pasta company because I partnered with them for Pasta Friday. And
wow,
it was just,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was just this
what
amazing.
Company was that?
They're called Rusticella d'Abruzzo, and it's owned by this brother and sister, Stefania and John Luigi, and they're distributed into the U.S. by this importing company called Manicoretti, and I have a relationship with Manicoretti also, and they're all just amazing. And before I even had a contract for the cookbook, I contacted them like, hey, this is my idea, and I love your pasta. I use it all the time, and I would love for us to do something together. And since then, I mean, I now have this incredible relationship with the people who own Manicoretti, with the people who own the pasta company, and they invited me to Italy to see their factory, and they put me up in a castle.
What? A castle?
Yeah, this castle in Abruzzo. Every year they do this event called Primo Grano.
Okay.
Where they invite about 12 people from all over the world to learn more about their pasta.
All right.
And normally it's, you know, distributors or chefs, and then there was me, and everyone's like, what do you do? I'm like, well, I'm not. I write cookbooks, and I think I'm going to open a restaurant. So, like, I wasn't exactly the kind of person that they normally invite.
Mm-hmm.
But so they invited me to this event, and I got to meet people from China and Israel, and a couple of other people from California and from Germany and Brazil, like just everywhere.
Yeah.
And they took for 7 days. They took us all around Abruzzo, and took us to their mills and their factory. And we had a class with Stefania where she taught us the traditional way to make chitarra. And it was incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, it was a really great opportunity. And now I actually saw both of them were in New York for the Fancy Food Show recently, so I got to reconnect with them,
which was great.
But yeah, I mean, these things just sort of, I'm not going to say that things just happen because I feel like I push really hard in my life to make these things happen. But it's been pretty great. It's been exciting. There's been like very, very high highs and very low lows in my life.
Do you have any like favorite things to do, hobbies, like decompression from it all, like when it comes to cooking? Like, do you ever get, that's, I don't want to say sick of it, but just, you know, anything just to take your mind off of it all?
Yeah, I mean, I run a lot.
Okay.
And that's definitely my like decompression. Like,
good,
I need
a good thing to do if you're eating a lot of pasta.
It's also why, yes. Yeah, I think about it often. Like whenever on Fridays when I run around Prospect Park, I'm like, Pasta Friday night. I gotta keep running. But but not only so I could eat lots of carbs, but also it's like my alone time, my time without kids, the time that I could think about how my day is gonna go, just burn off some steam. And it's just, it's for me, it's the perfect head clearing activity.
Yeah.
So yeah, I run almost every day. And I feel like if I don't, I get jittery and, you know, I think it's like the day just doesn't feel right. So I don't know. Now living in New York, though, I don't know. I got to figure out what I'm going to do in the winter. Might need a treadmill or something. But
obviously, I want people to go out and right away even pre-order your book or go out and buy your book. But is there any kind of little snippet, like an idea that you can give the listeners what to expect from the book, or you know?
Yeah. So the book is set up seasonally, and it's set up so you could basically start anywhere you want and easily start doing your own Pasta Fridays. So you could open it up, you know, in the new year or in summer, and there are 52 pasta recipes, and all of them use a different shape of pasta.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, which was cool because Rusticella, the pasta company, was actually super excited about that because they have like over 100 shapes, and they're like, oh, we could, you know, you could test out this one and that one and all these cool things that people don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
So each recipe uses a different shape, but I also give substitutions for, because it's not always easy to find these somewhat rare shapes, I guess you could say. So you could just start anywhere and have your own pasta nights. There's lots of tips on how to scale up for a crowd and how to shop on a budget and where to find ingredients. And there's stories about how Pasta Friday started and how to control all those kids in your house.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to make it really easy for people to take the book and just go. It's not intended to be the cookbook that sits on your coffee table. You know, it's paperback. It's meant to get dirty. It's meant to, you know, to be used often.
Yeah.
The recipes can also be made on a weeknight for your family. It doesn't have to be for a big crowd. And they're just really somewhat creative, also kind of nostalgic and just really comforting pastas.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite kind of pasta?
Yes. Well, It changes, but I would say right now my two favorite shapes of pasta are bucatini and paccheri. Okay. Are my two favorite shapes, and they're pretty different. You know, bucatini is long and thick, and it's got a hole in the middle, and it's just fun to slurp it and like have the sauce get stuck in it, and they're just it's just so much fun to eat. And paccheri is like a really sort of like a big rigatoni, except it's thinner. And it doesn't have ridges, and it's also just you could stuff it with things, or you could have it with like a cheesy pasta with all the cheese gets stuck in it, or you could have it with like a slick kind of seafoody pasta, a seafoody sauce, and it's also just really good.
Yeah, what goes into figuring out like what sauce for what pasta? It's a world I know very little of.
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite a science, and a lot of it is based on what you like, but I think there are some rules. I don't even know if I'd call them rules, but there are some things to think about when you're pairing sauce with pasta. Like last night when my nieces were here, I made a vodka sauce, and I was asking my 13-year-old niece Jasmine, I'm like, well, what kind of shape do you want? And I put a whole bunch of, I have so much pasta in the house, and I just like put all these shapes out on the table. She's like, well, penny, obviously. And I was like, really? She's like, oh yeah, like you can't have vodka sauce with anything else. So I was like, okay. But in a way she's right, because I think that the ridges on the penne help really capture the cream sauce, and it gets, you know, all the nice cream, the cream sauce gets stuck in the middle, and it's just a fun shape to stick on your fork and eat with vodka sauce. I think that like linguine, which is, you know, like all, like thin and slick, sauce doesn't really stick as much to it, but I like linguine is really good with like a scampi or
I was just going to say like a clam. Like,
yeah. Like I think like when I think of linguine, I think seafood because I like the slickness of it. I also like it with something with like guanciale when you have that like the fat renders and it also gives you that silky sauce, and that's also kind of good with linguine.
Again, regretting that I didn't eat before. I'm asking the question, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's more traditional Italian cooks that will have way more to say about pairing pasta with sauces than I do. You know, I think that this book is not an authentic Italian cookbook. I mean, I tried to stick to some rules, I guess you would say, but I mean, I could see some traditional Italian cooks being like, oh no, this is not the way you make the sauce for meatballs, but yeah, I mean, I just combine my cooking from my great grandmother, from, you know, 11 years in Oakland, from growing up in New York, and it's just sort of a combination of all of these, you know, techniques and ingredients that kind of come together for the way that I cook.
Yeah, well, and I think that's what, I mean, pasta is that forever evolving food, but at the same time, maybe the sauces are, but pasta, I guess, itself isn't.
Yeah.
But it's just that food that you can, you know, that obviously you can make it in your home, or you can go out to a fancy restaurant and have it too. And there's this place in Jersey City called Cordo, and it's I believe I'm gonna pronounce this correctly, Cucina Povera. So it's like the pauper's kitchen kind of style, and they have, you know, it's simple menu, you know, four different appetizers, and it's forever, you know, always changing, you know, week to week or every other week, and you know, four different appetizers, and then they have, you know, then a big like four or five different bowls of pasta, and then like three different entrees to choose from. But their pastas, they have this one, I think it's called like the Midnight Spaghetti, and it's got, you know, anchovies in it and capers, and it's just
perfect.
Like and little bits of bacon. It was pretty much you know. And then my girlfriend says, like, oh, my grandfather, because he's her grandfather's Croatian, you know, right next to Italy. And she's like, oh, this is exactly what he would make when I was younger. And it's just like you kind of take
good.
The little leftovers, everything, and put it into the spaghetti, and it's amazing. And it is. And that's just like, and that's the fun thing that I think that's what's going to be fun, you know, with anyone that gets your cookbook and tries to make those recipes.
Yeah.
So they can realize, like, oh, yeah, I can make something really tasty and meaningful and pleasurable, and it's just right in my own, you know, right in my own home.
Yeah, I mean, pasta could be so easy.
Yeah.
With just a few ingredients. Like, if you would just have, you know, a pound of pasta, a lemon, salt, and butter, like, you could be set. Maybe some fresh herbs. But, yeah, I mean, you could, it's so easy to make something great with just a few things.
Is there anything between your restaurant, I'm sure even back with you know, mac and cheese and everything like that, the gluten-free, I mean, that definitely came much more into the spotlight in the past 10 years or so. What kind of change, not even changes, but just things you've, you know, as a restaurateur that you see that, you know, you've done or others are doing to help with that?
Yeah, I mean, at Homeroom, all of the mac and cheeses were available gluten-free.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, and that was definitely a necessity in Oakland, because even before we opened, so many people would email us and contact us and just like, you can have gluten-free, you can have gluten-free. So we found some great gluten-free pasta, and we tested out different recipes to make a bechamel that is gluten-free. And I feel like, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, because you could say something's gluten-free and use, you know, a not great brand of pasta, and it just falls apart in the sauce.
Yeah.
Or the bechamel, you need to find the right flour to go in it. And a lot of the flours, the gluten-free flours, have a very strong taste. So if you're using like a potato flour, is potato flour even gluten-free? I think it is. There's all these flours that just really taste like what it is. So we had to test out a bunch of them. Tapioca flour ended up being a really great choice.
Oh, okay.
So we used that for years, and then we ended up using a blend of a few different flours. But yeah, you got to really experiment and play with different ingredients to see which one's going to work. But I'll definitely have gluten-free options at the new restaurant, and vegan too. I mean, there were lots of people who requested a vegan mac and cheese at Homeroom, and ours was actually like really great. and yeah, we didn't believe in using any of the fake cheeses, you know. So we wanted to make a sauce that was based on just like spices and consistency. And so we used nutritional yeast and a bunch of really good spices and some garlic and soy sauce. And we had, it had this really amazing creamy texture and a salty taste. And a lot of people who weren't even vegan would get it, and they would add bacon to it or sausage, and which
never hurts.
The vegan mac and cheese with bacon and mushrooms was really good. Yeah, I mean, it was for people mainly who didn't eat dairy. So okay. There wasn't, I mean, we would always do a pasta with like vegetables and butter with like olive oil for people who wouldn't eat dairy, but okay. They would often come in and get the vegan mac with meat added to it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't be Foodie Films if we didn't talk a couple of tasty food scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked you some of your favorite movies, and I decided to go with two different scenes. I feel like they're, you know, the juxtaposition of them works pretty well. How about we start with Goodfellas and stirring the sauce? Like, that just like... Ray Liotta explaining the sauce, that's just, I love it. So we'll play that clip and we'll talk about it.
See, I was cooking dinner that night. I had to start braising the beef, pork butt, and veal shanks for the tomato sauce.
I'm gonna make all this meat.
It was Michael's favorite. I was making ziti with the meat gravy, and I'm planning to roast some peppers over the flames, and I was gonna put on some string beans with some olive oil and garlic, and I had some beautiful cutlets that were cut just right that I was gonna fry up before dinner just as an appetizer. Right, so I was home for about an hour. Now, my plan was to start the dinner early so Karen and I could unload the guns that Jimmy didn't want and then get the package for Lois to take to Atlanta for her trip later that night.
Who's been carving their initials in the tomato?
No, I kept looking out the window, and I saw that the helicopter was gone.
Mike, keep an eye on the sauce, all right? Stay here with your Uncle Michael, all right? I'll see you later.
So I asked my brother Michael to watch the sauce, and Karen and I started out.
Well, that scene, that's like right in the middle of... Henry is all over. He's all coked up.
Yeah.
You've got like Harry Nilsson, Fire on the Mountain playing, and he's looking for the helicopter.
Yeah,
he goes to pick up Michael from the hospital, and he's gonna make Michael's favorite meal. And he's got the cutlets, which are perfect. He's gonna put out for the. So just like a Pasta Friday, right?
That's, oh, exactly. Yeah. We're always looking outside for the helicopter. Luckily, they never came after anyone that was at my house.
What is it about this movie? And obviously, there is just so much. I when figuring out this podcast, I really, you know, I made like rules of the movie. You know, we're going to highlight, you know, the episodes that we do all like talk about a movie the whole time. I made three rules that the movie is clearly about food. The movie takes place in a restaurant or a bar, or the character or a main character works in like food or drink or something like that. And I was like, ah, but Goodfellas, like, so I was like, okay, Goodfellas doesn't fall into that, but there will be plenty of scenes we'll talk, and then, you know, and then every episode we talk a famous food scene from a non-foodie movie. So we have talked the jail scene, you know, them.
He's
getting all those
garlic
amazing foods.
So thin.
Yeah, cutting. Yeah, exactly. Cutting the garlic.
I think that's my favorite food scene
with
in that movie.
Yeah, with the razor.
Yes.
And then there's even I have. It's one of my prized possessions. The painting that Joe Pesci's mom.
No, with
and
the
that's
two
when,
dogs.
Yeah, you got one dog looking one way, one dog looking the other way. You got this guy in the middle saying, "What do you want from me?" He's like, oh,
that's
look
my
at
dad's
me.
Favorite scene in the movie.
It's the
he
best.
Brings it up all the time.
Because they go in there and they're going to get the knife to finish off that guy. And then the mom, like, what are you doing? You're like, why don't you stay? Stay a while. And just like De Niro with the ketchup bottle. And
oh,
just like
my God.
And everything.
Yes.
So we're still going to cover that scene eventually someday, too. But I love, you know, like, yeah, you know, we got to, can I borrow the big knife? Because we got to get the foot, you know, the hoof.
The hoof.
The hoof. But this scene, I love it because it's just even in when he's selling guns and drugs and picking and he's all, you know, coked up, and it's just hilarious that still it's just like, no, but I'm gonna make this. I'm gonna cook this meal.
Oh,
and
yeah,
this,
and
like,
it was still the most important thing that he was doing was the sauce. Don't forget to stir the
Don't
sauce.
Forget to stir the sauce. That's such an amazing movie. I love it.
I mean, that movie has had such an impact on me so many different in so many phases of my life.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw it when I was really young, also because it took place where I grew up. So the whole movie took place in the five towns, basically. You know, like Lorraine Bracco was from Lawrence, which was right next to the town where I grew up. And the diner, when they found out that Joe Pesci was dead, my dad took me there every Sunday when I was growing up.
Oh, that's
but,
awesome.
I mean, yeah, that
Do
was
you know
the
if that
diner.
Still...
Oh, it's totally still there.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I mean, it's they redid it a few times, I think, since then. And that phone booth is not there. But that diner is still there on Rockaway Turnpike. So yeah, I mean, I just feel like that movie has sort of followed me. There's one scene that they're at a beach club when they meet Lorraine Bracco's neighbor for the first time, and they're sitting at the pool, and I was a lifeguard at that beach club.
Wow.
yeah. So it's funny. And then all the scenes with the food were just so similar to my family and for, you know, stirring the sauce and cutting the garlic super thin because, you know, God forbid you have big chunks of garlic in your sauce. No one's going to eat it. So
it is a perfect movie just to show that realm of even food and just the, you know, no one's a professional cook in that movie, but just the passion and precision that goes into it. And if it isn't perfect, then it's just the evening's ruined.
Yeah. And they talk about food all the time
all the time.
Like, you know, they talk about what they're going to eat later and, oh, well, you know, even that scene with the two dogs and Joe Pesci's mom says to Henry Hill, like, oh, you're never eating. How come you never eat?
and saying to Pesci, like, why don't you find a nice girl? He's like, I got a nice girl right here, Mom. And I got you. Find a nice girl every day. Well, like I said, I think we'll enjoy the juxtaposition of this. Then we'll go to Little Miss Sunshine and the diner scene and the ice cream. So
oh, yeah.
Play that right now.
Mom, how much can we spend?
I would say $4. Anything under $4.
Hi. You ready?
Yeah, I'm gonna hit the number 5 at coffee place.
All right. Number 7, over easy, and grapefruit juice.
Grapefruit?
I would like a fruit plate, and do you have chamomile?
Yes.
With honey, please.
I would like the lumberjack and coffee, and extra bacon.
Extra.
No, Dad, you should probably.
Richard, don't start.
He's gonna kill himself.
Well, it's his life.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Garden salad? And you.
I'm sorry.
Take your time.
Don't apologize, Olive. It's a sign of weakness.
Well, I want, okay, I know what I want, Okay, can I get the, waffles and, I don't know, what does alamodi mean?
Oh, that means it comes with ice cream.
Okay, alamodi.
Olive for breakfast.
Said $4.
Okay, you're right. Okay, be right back.
Actually, Olive, a la mode
in French translates literally as in the fashion, à la mode. Mode is derived from Latin modus, meaning due or proper measure.
Frank, shut up.
Richard.
Olive, can I tell you a little something about ice cream?
Yeah.
Well, ice cream is made from cream, which comes from cow's milk, and cream has a lot of fat in it.
Richard.
What? She's gonna find out anyway, remember?
What? Find out what?
Well, when you eat ice cream, the fat in the ice cream becomes fat in your body.
Richard, I swear to God.
It's true.
What? What's wrong?
Nothing, honey, nothing's wrong.
So, if you eat a lot of ice cream, you might become fat, and if you don't, you're gonna stay nice and skinny, sweetie.
Olive, Richard is an idiot. I like a woman with meat on her bones.
Why is everyone so upset?
No, no one's upset, honey. I just want you to understand it's okay to be skinny, and it's okay to be fat if that's what you want to be. Whatever you want, it's okay.
Okay, but Olive, let me ask you this. Those women in Miss America, are they skinny or are they fat? Honey?
They're skinny, I guess.
Yeah. Guess they don't eat a lot of ice cream.
Okay. Coffee? Coffee? Grapefruit? Thank you. Chamomile? And here's your ice cream. A la mode, right? I'll be back with your waffles in a sec.
Does anyone want my ice cream?
That, I mean, just another, a totally different family dynamic that
yes.
of from Goodfellas, but this, but still just as, like, a different kind of excruciating.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Kinnear in this scene is just a complete jackass. Like, I think in his mind, he's being very helpful.
Yeah.
And then between, you know, like, him as the father and Toni Collette as the mom, you got Alan Arkin as the grandfather, Steve Carell as the uncle, and... Yeah, pretty much like Greg Kinnear is just, because what, he's kind of like, he's a life coach
yeah,
in that movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just the way he's explained to the adorable, like, Abigail Breslin at that point, just, you know, like, ice cream's made of, you know, cream.
Oh,
and cream comes from
it's excruciating.
It's excruciating. I mean, what, just watching that and as a mother, just like, what kind of food lessons do you try to set for your boys? Like, just as far as like educational and, you know, explaining like what's good, what's bad. And obviously having moments of like, yeah, okay. Eat, you know, what you want, right? Maybe you do.
Yeah, no, it's exactly that. It's like, it's sort of the balance,
yeah.
You know, and it really depends on the kid too. Yeah. You know, like my 7-year-old, my older son, Nico, is very into eating things that are healthy. Like he's the rule follower kid. Like he always wants to do, you know, not what's expected of him, but like he loves to know what the rules are, and he wants to know like what time it is all the time and what time he can do things. And so for him, he's like, well, is this healthy or is that healthy? And I'm like, Nico, it's okay if you eat things that are not healthy,
yeah.
You know, and he will, you know, occasionally he enjoys treats and stuff. But so for him, it's sort of easier.
Okay.
And then my younger son, Luca, he likes treats too, but neither one of them have a huge sweet tooth.
Okay.
Which is, and my husband doesn't either. So, and I guess I don't have the biggest sweet tooth, maybe, but just because we've been married now for a while and I don't eat as many sweets, but they don't crave it all the time. So I rarely have to, or I pretty much never have to say like, no, you can't eat that. For me, it's just trying to get them to eat more vegetables and trying to find the line. It's like, okay, well, you could eat all the pasta you want, but like, let's throw some broccoli in there. And they're usually pretty, pretty good with it. But what I've learned is that you just can't force it. You know, like my younger son, Luca, is really thin, and it always worried me that he wasn't eating enough. And the more I tried to force it, the less he would eat. So now it's like, you know, we make good food, we put it on the table, we expect them to eat it. And if they don't, it's like, all right, you know, I mean, you're not going to get dessert if you don't eat.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not going to make you sit here and finish your food and, you know, clear your plate. And, you know, it's just... I want food to be enjoyable for them.
Sure.
I want them to enjoy sitting down at the table and appreciate good food. And they do for the most part, especially now since I've kind of loosened up, especially on with the younger one about about just how much he's eating in general. My niece, my 13-year-old niece, Jasmine, definitely has a sweet tooth, which is sort of great because, you know, when she's here, like even this weekend, I'm like, all right, Jasmine, where are we getting gelato? And where are we going to go get like some fancy cupcakes or cookies? And so I really enjoy that with her. I feel like it's like just great bonding too, that we could chat about all the delicious ice cream flavors and especially in Brooklyn, like all the places to explore. Like she's very excited to try rolled ice cream, which I haven't had yet either. So when she's here, maybe next weekend or the following weekend, we're going to scout around Brooklyn and find some good rolled ice cream. Yeah.
Have you found any like new, you know, restaurants that you're like, oh, these are the, like any favorites of yours?
In terms of like desserts or restaurants?
Just, I mean, all around the food, you know, food.
Yes. Let me think. Where have we been lately that has been really good? I mean, we haven't been to too many places, but we've been to a couple of the Momofuku restaurants and they're just like incredible. And, you know, we went to one or two before we left in 2008, but now it's like, I mean, they're all so different and just amazing. Like we went to the Momofuku Nishi and had their pasta that's made from like the chickpea sauce. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, it was incredible. And I went to Momofuku Sam and had this like curry with burrata and spinach. And it was like just off the wall delicious.
They're definitely like pushing boundaries is, you know, just really exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's like things that it's like, is this going to be good? Like, I don't know. And then you're like, oh my God, this is like one of the best things ever. So those have been really good. Where else have we eaten? We went to this place in Williamsburg that was delicious. St. Anselm, I think it was called. Mm-hmm. And their steaks were amazing. And it was just, the service was great. Everything about it was so good. Yeah, I mean, I think there's just no shortage of places. I mean, it's eating out in New York is just incredible.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you must be happy having moved back here for the pizza scene, right?
Oh, it's so much better. It's so much better. Yes.
And bagels.
Oh, yeah. I had a bagel today. I'm like, this is a bagel. Yeah. And, you know, and they try in Oakland, and there was actually just like an artichoke pizza just opened in my old neighborhood in Oakland. Okay. So I wonder if it's the same as it is here, if it tastes the same. And there's like a very specific California style of pizza. I mean, some do it on like sourdough, but it's like this typical thin crust with like, you know, it's usually like a really puffy light crust. Mm-hmm. And it's always, there's rarely slices. You get, you know, a full pie. But it's all the same everywhere. Like everyone does it and it just tastes the same and it's good. But in New York, it's just so much better.
Yeah. You go to one place because they got great bread. You go to one place because they got great sauce.
Yeah.
And then you find that perfect slice somewhere. And
yeah. Yeah. Even my boys are like, Mama, the pizza is way better in New York. I'm like, I know.
when I think of like how to, kids eating and trying to get them to, I've got a 1-year-old niece, so I'm just very curious to see what she, because my sister has very severe gluten allergy, so she hasn't had any kind of gluten yet, but I think she's had pretty much tried like everything else, and even her pediatrician was like, at, you know, very young age, like give her peanut butter, because kids are not, you know, that's how peanut allergies are starting for some people, because, you know, parents will wait too long to let their kids try peanut butter. And it comes from like school systems, because I have an 11-year-old cousin that, like, on his birthday even, like, he wouldn't want to have birthday cake because they're being taught in school, like, if you eat sugar, like, you're going to get diabetes. And they're just like, you know, almost like fear tactics of like, well, it's kids. Like, you can, like, enjoy Halloween, enjoy Easter, like, when you have these big, like, you know, candy moments, but...
I mean, and kids love doing the opposite of what you tell them, too. I mean, they're going to end up, you know, just, like, you know, eating all the candy and all the cake that they can when they're allowed to, because they're not, they have been told that they can't, like, you know, it totally could have the opposite effect. Yeah, I definitely don't believe in that.
Yeah.
Well, we try, like, my kids are picky eaters, and I have tried, and I have friends whose kids will eat everything, and I have no idea how they have accomplished that. But, you know, even at Pasta Friday, I always make 1 or 2 pounds of pasta just with butter and cheese on the side for the kids. So, and we would feed the kids first, so we have room for everyone else to eat. And rarely do the kids eat the grown-up pasta, but they would. Like a couple of my friends, their kids would always eat the grown-up pasta. I'm like, how do you do that? How do you get them to eat that? But we try to do the 3-bite rule. So the 3-bite rule is like you have to take 3 bites of something before you tell me that you don't like it. Mm-hmm. So no matter what it is, I mean, I won't give them anything super spicy, but like, you know, if you take 3 bites and you still don't like it, then you don't have to eat it. Mm-hmm. So that's what I try to do with them.
Yeah. And that's what even, again, just makes it, like, heartbreaking in a scene with Abigail Breslin. She's just so adorable and saying, like, what's a la Modi? And,
you know, oh, I know.
And just, yeah, and then Greg Kinnear just, like, shooting her down. And then she gets it served, and she's like, does anyone want my... She just wanted waffles, a la Modi. And then she just doesn't want to eat ice cream at that point.
That's sad.
But there's, I mean, there's at least there's a good message in the end of that movie.
Yeah.
And she dances to Super Freak.
I know. That movie is so great.
They get kicked out of the... yeah, that came... I always remember that came out the same year, speaking of Scorsese, like Goodfellas, a Scorsese movie, The Departed was the same year. And Departed won Best Picture. That was a great year for movies.
Yeah.
That was 2006.
I'm
very Rain Man when it comes to movies.
Yeah, I would have no idea when that came out.
Yeah, it was the same year as like Children of Men and The Fountain, and there's a couple other great movies.
Oh, wow.
But, last but not least, we've got our our segment of Gut Instincts. So our little speed round. So just, you know, whatever comes to you first when I ask these questions. Mm-hmm. Favorite fast food, if any? Or at one point.
Shake Shack?
Shake Shack, okay. Yeah, Shake Shack is a fan favorite.
Food, right?
Yeah, got that La Frida meat. Go-to alcoholic beverage?
Wine. Red wine.
Red wine?
Yeah.
Favorite kind of red wine?
I really like Pinot Noirs.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
I could tell you my go-to cocktail.
Please.
Mezcal Gimlet.
Nice.
Really good.
Yeah. Favorite childhood snack?
Oreos.
Oreos. Mm-hmm. Would you like twist it?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Okay. Making the double
it,
stuff before double
it,
stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. I think I know the answer to this from our last bit of our conversation. Sweet or savory?
Savory. Yep. Yeah.
Favorite food city, domestic and foreign?
Oh, domestic. I think it would have to be Brooklyn at this point. I mean, maybe it's just because I haven't lived here for a while and I'm so excited by it. But yeah, I think Brooklyn and where else? Probably Rome.
Rome?
Yeah.
Nice.
Rome or Barcelona? I would say Rome.
I've been to Rome. I actually I went to Rome because I was in Greece and I was going to Croatia. And when I was planning the trip, it was cheaper to fly from Greece to Rome, stay in Rome for 2 nights, and then fly to Croatia than just a flight from Greece to Croatia. So I was like, well, I'll make the best of it. I mean, Rome is beautiful.
Yeah.
Touristy, but, you know, I mean, New York being my city, that doesn't really affect
right.
me.
Right. Yeah, but Rome is such a cool city,
yeah.
And the food really is so great.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Favorite cuisine? Can't say Italian. So that's a cop-out.
It totally is. Yeah. Favorite cuisine other than Italian. Well, when I'm not eating pasta, I'm always craving sushi.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I'd have to say Japanese.
Guilty pleasure food.
Movie theater popcorn.
Oh, nice.
Definitely a guilty pleasure.
With a whole lot of butter.
Oh, yeah. It's like so terrible, but so good.
Favorite condiment.
Definitely hot sauces, and I have a couple in particular that I love.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm such a crazy person when it comes to spice. I like things super spicy. So there's this brand called Tutto Calabria, and they make the best chili sauce. And it's just like Calabrian hot peppers and olive oil, and you spoon it on your pasta, and it is so good.
Awesome. I'm
yeah,
to check
so that's
that
really
out.
Good. And then any kind of like Asian-y chili oil, I love.
Yeah. I was reading your crispy prosciutto, like about like what that.
Yeah. That's
that sounds phenomenal.
Super good.
Yeah.
And, everyone at Pasta Friday was always like begging to make the crispy prosciutto, but I'd make it just with prosciutto ends. So you're not wasting a ton of money on really good prosciutto. So you ask the butcher for the ends and you cut it up and you put it in the oven and it gets super crispy and you just mix it with dried chili flakes and olive oil and mix it up and it's so good.
Oh.
But you got to get good chili flakes. You
yeah.
can't go to the food store and get a jar of like brown chili
okay.
flakes. You
yeah.
need to get like really fresh, bright red flakes.
Good to know.
Yeah.
What's the last thing you ate?
Well, I had a bagel, an everything bagel toasted with veggie cream cheese this morning.
So good.
Yeah, it was really good while I was waiting for my computer to not work at the Apple Store.
What would be your last meal?
Well, I mean, it may be a cop-out, but it would definitely be pasta. Mm-hmm. And which pasta would it be? Oh, man.
I read about your father's roasted red pepper sauce.
Oh, that's such a good one. Yeah, the roasted red pepper sauce is one of my favorites since I was a kid. And even, you know, like the neighborhood girls would come over and eat. I'm like, my dad's making the sauce. Come on over. Yeah, that would be a really good last meal. Or, I mean, my grandmother's spaghetti and meatballs could be another good option. Yeah, it would be something with, like, a long noodle, like either a bucatini or a spaghetti, mm-hmm. with either like the red pepper sauce, all with like a meat sauce. But yeah, pasta, wine, some bread.
Yeah, nothing like good meatballs. That's right? Just like,
yes.
my grandmother, my father's mother is 100% Italian, and so a big Italian meals. And my mom is Irish German, and she's a great cook. But you know, just didn't have the 100% Italian, you know, like, you know, she's got the asterisk next to it being German Irish, but, you know, she got the recipe from my grandmother, and even my Italian grandmother learned all German recipes from her German mother-in-law.
Oh, wow.
You know, so like she makes sauerbraten that's really good, and she's passed these recipes on to my mom. I think one of the greatest compliments my mom has ever received was that she made the meatballs, you know, I mean, several times, but then like one time, my dad's kind of like quiet at dinner, and like I'm always like, oh, thanks for dinner, mom, and like, this is great, and I'm just talking about the food, and my dad's just, you know, they're, I mean, enjoying it, but one time he's like, oh, these meatballs are really good, and she's like, I can die happy now. Like, you said that, you know, your mother's recipe, I did well.
Nice. That is quite a compliment.
It is quite a compliment.
Yeah.
Do you prefer, this sounds tricky, especially now having moved to New York, do you prefer to dine in or dine out?
Still dine in.
Dine in, yeah.
Yeah, I prefer to have everyone here or go to someone's house and to be able to sit as long as you want and enjoy the company.
Yeah, that's like the best part. I mean, you know, if you enjoy cooking, and then obviously all the other stuff is the positives of friends and family, but the biggest is like you just get to stay as long as you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, although, I mean, Pasta Friday, we do have a cutoff.
You do have a cutoff.
Yes.
Oh, well, you kind of have to when it's that like large amount of people.
And yeah.
You
just and also, probably want to so clean up
and everything. And, yeah. All the kids. Yeah. Exactly. What would be? So I'm sure it might be a pasta. Maybe you'll surprise me. But what would be your spirit food? What best embodies like your personality?
I'm gonna say. maybe a jalapeno pepper.
Oh, okay.
It's one of my favorite foods too, because I put jalapeno on everything. Mm-hmm. Like, dice it up, mix it with olive oil, sprinkle it on pasta, I put it on salads. Yeah. And it's not super spicy, but it's crunchy, and it sort of could surprise you about how spicier or mild it could be. I think it's just sort of this like unexpected but always great addition to many different things.
Another question you answered, but I'll ask for a second favorite, but favorite movie snack. I mean, you said movie theater popcorn, but do you like having some people like, you know, getting the something sweet too?
Yes. Junior mints. Yeah, Junior mints and popcorn.
Nice. Yeah. Do you ever buy Junior mints and like bring them home and freeze them, or
no? I'm kind of scared to do that because I know once I start doing it.
Oh yeah, it's
I'm
a slippery slope. Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Yeah, I haven't done it.
Thinking of like sweet tooth, like I'm trying to be, you know, more like health conscious and just trying to eat less sweets. Mm-hmm. But like one thing I'm doing is like I'll just have like a big bar of like, you know, like good dark chocolate that I'll just pick out from the free, like that. Like every day I just need, like after dinner, like I need something sweet.
Yes.
And so like at least like maybe just a piece of like good
dark chocolate dark is chocolate. So good.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, you definitely got to try Askenozy chocolate is I think the best. It's great.
I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
And last but not least, what's the greatest lesson you've learned in food? Easy question.
Man, that is a tough one.
It's a loaded question.
Yeah, I mean, especially because food and business is so connected for me. So it's It's tough to say because
You've learned many lessons. Yeah.
I've learned many lessons in creating recipes and the way that we eat, and then in terms of food with running a business. I don't know if it's a lesson, but I think one of the greatest things about food for me that I've learned is just, I mean, the whole concept of Pasta Friday and why I did it is the whole idea of just eating together. Mm-hmm. And I don't think enough people actually do it. I mean, the idea of just inviting people over to eat or just sitting with your family and just not doing meals in front of the TV and not doing, I mean, it doesn't even have to be something fancy. I mean, there are nights that my boys and I will have like rice and chickpeas for dinner because it's delicious and it's easy to make and it's mm-hmm. the quickest thing that I could do at the moment. But like, it's just the idea of just sitting down and eating together. So I think one thing that I've learned from early on, from when I was a kid, is just, you know, making it a meal that you could connect with people and sit down and enjoy. And I think in terms of food with business, I would say appreciating every step of it, you know, like appreciating the people that you're working with and your vendors and your producers and really taking the time to get to know people. Yeah. And I guess it's sort of the same, you know, sort of the same idea as eating with people, but you know, just not stepping over anything or making everyone that you know a part of it, and just, you know, being nice to people and trying to connect while you're also doing business with them, I guess, if that makes sense.
No, those are two great lessons.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing those.
Sure.
And thank you for sharing your story.
Yeah.
So, Allison, thank you. And please right now tell everyone where they can find you. Obviously, you know, from Instagram, your book, your restaurant, and all of that.
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at Pasta Friday, and you could pre-order the Pasta Friday cookbook on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the places that sell cookbooks. You'll be able to find it. And my website's also pastafriday.com. And then the restaurant is going to be called Pasta Louise. And I don't have anything up for it yet, but I will soon. And it'll be at Pasta Louise. And it's going to be at 8th Avenue and 8th Street in Park Slope in Brooklyn.
And you also have some live events too, right?
Some great events coming up. In the Bay Area, I have a ton. I'm going to be at Market Hall and Omnivore Books and Flora and Lucanda. So if you're in the Bay Area, I have tons of events, and I have them all listed on my Instagram. And in New York, I'm doing a bunch of dinners and events. I'll be at the Prospect Park Green Market on October 5th. That's going to be super fun. And then I'm doing a running event with Lululemon. And yeah, so I'm going to have all the dates posted for all of these events coming up soon too. I'm just finalizing a few dates for things. But yeah.
I can't wait to check those out.
Yeah, be cool.
Well, I know some people have appreciated our little sign-off line, but I just have a feeling you'll appreciate the most, just given just how you're brought up and just what food means to you. My grandmother that I spoke of before had this line she always said when the platter was empty, and she was, you know, and there was like a few pieces, and you kind of look at everybody like, can I take this? She's like, don't worry, there's more to cut. And so I was like, when I was creating this podcast, I was like, oh, I want like a sign-off, you know, sign-off line, a catchphrase. And there's more to cut. I mean, that just transcends from what she was saying it for, just to life. And like you're saying, appreciate everything.
Yeah.
So if you can remind the foodie fans by saying there's more to cut.
There's more to cut.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy, and I feel like I'm loving you. Love you, such a sweet thing, good enough to eat thing, and it's just a what I'm gonna do. Ooh, love is sweet.